everybody. It's Mike Cheffer, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com, and we are down here at the 41st Annual Chicago Jazz Festival on site doing Talking Jazz Show because I'm sitting here with Chris Madsen, incredible saxophonist, good friend of mine as well, which is always helpful. The new recording, Bonfire.
Got it.
Killing players as usual. Chris is on saxophone. He's also got Dana Hall on drums, Clark Summers on bass, and Stu Mindeman on piano. And, you know, you do so many different things, I mean, which we're going to talk about.
Sure.
But let's talk specifically about this recording that's coming out.
Yep.
What is going on with this recording? I mean, it's you know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, That's what I'm saying. This is, I have not dropped a record of original music in about 6 years now. So
has it been 6 years?
It's been about 6 years.
Because you do a lot of social media stuff.
Yeah.
You do a lot of different things that we'll talk about. But
right.
6 years, like a real record.
It is kind of a record. I was doing lots of sideman work for that time, and I kind of put the leader thing on hold. But I'm back in the game now, and I've got a record called Bonfire, Chris Madsen Quartet. Like you said, it's all original music, and part of the thing with this album is that it was sort of me revisiting some older tunes that I had sort of put the germs of the ideas down way back when I was in grad school in the early 2000s, and they were just sitting on my hard drive, and I was kind of poking around a little bit and thinking, huh, some of these could actually work as tunes, you know. So I kind of put some finishing touches on them, and I, in some cases they were just the slightest little bit of an idea, but I finished them up. And we've got 8 selections on there. Some of them are brand new, written a few years ago. Some of them are sort of, like I said, continuations of ideas that happened many, many years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited.
You kind of delve back into your archives and start pulling things out. But
exactly.
I think it's interesting because I was talking to somebody yesterday down here, Rocky Era,
sure.
Talking to Rocky. And, you know, he pulled some tunes out that, you know, he wrote a while ago, and then they brought them back. But it's interesting to me when you talk to somebody about that because, you know, you wrote this in grad school, like
exactly.
this tune or that tune, but you've grown so much as a musician.
Right.
When you went back and looked at some of these tunes, they were there. Are you just like, what was I thinking about, man? What is this?
Well, don't get me wrong. Not all of them worked, you know. I mean, but a handful of them did. And some of them I had actually written the entire tune, and I just never had a vehicle, the right group to sort of express it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I put this group together back in 2017 with Clark and Dana and Stu, and they just, you know, those guys are just such pros, and they're almost, in a way, they're specialists in interpreting and formulating other people's music and doing it, you know, with the utmost respect for the composer, and I really appreate them so much.
Yeah.
And not on top of that, they're just world-class players, but they're also just fantastic interpreters of the music too, and great artists.
How important is that? Because you brought up a great point. I mean, you wrote the tunes, and then you're sitting down, and they're looking at them for the first time,
yeah.
and you guys are going through stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you got two choices, right? You can either just say, "All right, well, you know, it's Chris's tune. We'll just play it the way he wants it played,
yeah.
and that's it." You obviously have a better relationship with them than just hiring them like as a one-off,
right.
so they're going to bring things up. But I feel like that's part of the deal. That's why you're playing with guys on a regular basis, because
yeah.
they feel comfortable to do that, and that only helps the music, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, I think so. I mean, like you said, I have lots of different interests in music. I love early styles of jazz. I love funk and fusion, and I love the kind of, you know, the stuff that's on this record, which is all basically what you could call modern jazz, you know, something
mm-hmm.
like that, contemporary styles. And I think having a regular group like that is, you know, based around interpreting your own music is just, the rewards pay off. I mean, and we just performed a few hours ago here at the fest,
yep.
and, you know, they bring it every time. And it's just, it's always a thrill to get your own music performed by people who really genuinely care about how it sounds, and they genuinely care about how you, whether or not you're happy with their interpretation.
That's so important too,
yeah.
you know. I mean, there's my biggest thing, and you know this, I mean, my biggest thing as a musician is to play with guys and play with guys that are not phoning it in.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, hey, man, you know, I get it. I mean, you're playing restaurant gigs every night. You're going to phone some things in at a certain point and
sure,
say whatever,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
But I also think that when you're interpreting somebody's original music, how difficult is it for you as the composer to get, now you wrote it,
yeah.
now you're playing it,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
to get in it and really get in it, like as if, you know what I'm talking about, like really be able to play over it as if you're the musician rather than composer. I mean, is there a switch in your brain on that?
There kind of is, just because, you know, a lot of these progressions, these, you take the chord progressions, the harmony, it's very non-traditional, and it's, you know, it doesn't, the stuff that we practice doing in traditional roles of schooling and things like that, it doesn't really apply to the modern, to these tunes, and if you have a if you're working toward a real singular voice, ideally, you know, your writing has a very unique quality to it, and so you have to develop your improvisation to fit over that as well. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, you gotta hit the woodshed, as they say, you know, on your own stuff. And you know, sometimes it's best to have it memorized, and you know, the other guys have it memorized if possible. Just because that way, like you said, you really kind of get into the meat of the tunes like that.
So. I mean, that to me would be the most. I mean, I'm just a drummer here, man. I quit music theory. I can't handle it. But to be writing everything and then say, okay, now I've got to attack this thing as if it's like I'm a musician now. You know, there's got to be a switch, I would imagine.
It is definitely. Yeah, it's different. It's like when you're composing something, you're not necessarily thinking. How am I going to improvise over this? Or how is this going? How am I going to interpret this? You know, that's it's almost a secondary thought. But yeah, you're right. You do kind of have to flip a switch and say, okay, and it all has to do so much with how the other people are interpreting it too. Maybe they'll. I mean, you know, for example, Dana came up with this groove on one of my tunes. It was supposed to be a backbeat, kind of like a soft, like easy backbeat, you know, like a rock beat.
Yep.
And he came up with this thing. He took out the mallets and he played. This kind of real amorphous groove on the toms, and it was in the moment. We hadn't talked about it. It was during it, and that's the take that we used. And I could see when he started doing it, he kind of looked up at me to say, "Is this all right?"
Yeah.
And I was just, "Yeah, of course, it's great." You know.
Keep going. Man.
Yeah, please. And that's the take that we used. So yeah, their input is crucial to that.
I mean,
so.
I think that's key too. I mean, because things organically will change, just like what you said. I mean, that I think is one of the hardest things to be writing original music and have it come out. Good
is to
find those guys that can listen to it and say, this should not be a ballad, this should be a bossa, or this should be a groove, or this should be this or that. So,
and
I mean,
for you to be open to that as the composer and not let the ego get in the way,
right?
You know, necessarily. So, that's a challenge, but yeah, it's when you have guys that are interested in that, it's great.
Another whole conversation, too, probably. I mean, we could talk about. So, let's talk a little bit about these other things because you know, you have these online series, and you and Clark have the duet book, and you came up with a brilliant name for a trio book called The Trio Book, which I love because Chicago Jazz Magazine is Chicago Jazz Magazine. I like to keep things simple, so I can understand what you're doing here.
Totally, yeah.
So let's talk about the duet book first off, because I think that was the first morphosis of the branding.
It was, yeah.
But it's interesting, right? So it's you and Clark. Talk about the premise of the whole thing.
The idea behind the duet book is basically the repertoire was bebop repertoire. We really wanted to sort of limit it to that repertoire, and partially because you don't hear those melodies played on the bass very often. But almost all the melodies are myself and Clark playing in unison, unless we do something extremely fast, and it's basically impossible to play.
Right.
But yeah, all those eighth note melodies that were written for saxophone or piano weren't really intended for the bass, but Clark put some blood, sweat, and tears into all those, and he produces like crazy on those things. So that's basically the idea behind the duet book. And then the trio book, we add Dana to the mix, and the repertoire gets a little bit more varied. We're not just playing bebop or classic styles of jazz. We're also not doing originals. That's sort of like a covers based thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we're open to different styles. We have something that's kind of more reminiscent of a breakbeat kind of a thing that we do, and then we have some swingers and that kind of thing.
So explain it to everybody. Trio book.
Yeah.
Duet book. Mm-hmm. I mean, are these books, physical books people can buy? These are just videos? What are they?
Well, that's a good question, and I've gotten that question many times.
Because that's the question I'm going to get in the comments,
of
so
course.
I'm asking.
No, they're not actual books. It's more of a book of songs. You know, think of it as a songbook.
Yeah.
Or a book of videos, if you want to think of it that way. No, it's more of a, you know, more sort of a just a collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, another thing that you do, alternate jazz history, which I love the concept. It's all online. It's on
online.
YouTube, Facebook, probably
all the social media,
everything. So explain what that is.
Alternate jazz history is an idea that I had. I've always been sort of a rabid transcriber. And I was always sort of pushed in that direction. My teachers always said transcribing is very important, and I took that to heart. And they also told me it's very important to try to inhabit the body and the sound and the mind of whoever it is you're transcribing.
Yeah.
And so I found that came kind of easily. You know, not everything comes easy in music. That was one thing that I really could do. I could do impersonations of other saxophone players, and I could sound like them. And I figured, I don't know, let me just try this. I had an idea for, it just popped into my head for the first one, Don Byas improvising over Giant Steps. Not something that ever actually happened.
Right.
But I don't know where it came from. But I thought, I'm just going to try this out. Let's see what would Don play over this? And
yeah.
I started, and I thought, you know, I wonder if this would be good for social media. And so I uploaded that one. I got a good response. And then, you know, I think seven videos later, we have a book.
You were taking requests too.
I do take requests, and yeah, we had a giveaway thing with my Reed company. We did a giveaway, a free lesson for a request. I've got some more in the can. You know, they do take a long time to put together.
Oh, yeah,
it's
man.
Difficult to do.
Yeah.
It kind of takes your practicing in a very specific direction, but it's definitely an ongoing project, and I plan to do more of those.
You know, but that always brings up the point, and I think this is really important. And I was having this conversation. I was on a panel on Tuesday at the Jazz Journalists Association.
Yeah.
We were talking about it, and I'm of the believer, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean, your generation, my generation, around, you know, in that area.
Sure, yeah.
We were exposed to a lot of different music.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
I mean, I grew up, I was listening to Iron Maiden, I'm listening to all that stuff, Metallica, everything else. I'm listening to Led Zeppelin, I'm listening to the Beatles, I'm listening to, you know, Herbie Hancock, I'm listening to whatever.
Of course.
And that builds into your playing.
Yeah.
And I love all the different styles. So I'm of the thought process now, because terrestrial radio is limited, I think artists are the new genre, meaning like it's not rock, blues, jazz, funk, whatever. It's Chris Madsen.
Very much,
it's
yeah.
Mekhi McRaven.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
whoever,
yeah.
you know. And so when you're doing this stuff, this is just stuff that you love playing. You're
yeah.
probably not thinking. I mean, you play in a lot of different groups. You guys are playing funk tunes and
yeah.
everything else. I mean,
yeah.
so kind of wrapping everything together, you're basically not... I think you're just playing stuff that you really were influenced by and you just love playing. Is that...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's especially now with the ubiquity of the streaming platforms and, you know, be that for better or for worse, really, you know. But we're able to explore so much music. And you're right, growing up, I mean, it's very rare that you get somebody, I think, that just limits themselves to only jazz.
Yeah.
It's not realistic because there's so much more out there to explore. And to allow those influences into your playing. And, you know, sometimes when I have a funk band called Kings of the Lobby.
Right,
and
right.
We have something else coming up. But I love that style. And it's almost like a release. It's like, I get to play this pop style, this funk style. You know, and if you listen to enough of that style of saxophone, it's sitting in your head just kind of waiting to come
yeah.
out. And so I love that. I love the standards. I play with a lot of vocalists. But, you know, I've listened to a lot of different styles of jazz over the years. And like I said, it's all kind of, it's in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to have these different outlets to just let that stuff out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, and it's you.
You're
you know,
right,
it's
right,
like, it's
right.
you.
That's
like
the trick.
If you just sat there and said, all right, all I'm going to do is play... you know, 1960s straight ahead jazz tunes,
yeah.
you'd probably go out of your mind,
well,
but it wouldn't also, you wouldn't develop your own voice.
Yeah, I think doing that definitely helps to solidify your own sound.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for sitting down. I'm glad we knocked this whole thing out,
well,
man. We
yeah,
made it happen.
Too.
Your schedule's
pleasure.
Crazy, so I'm glad we made this happen.
Likewise. Thank you so much,
oh,
man.
Oh, definitely,
yeah.
definitely. So hopefully, Chris will see you at an upcoming show. Hopefully, I'll see you somewhere. And if we don't see you somewhere soon, hopefully, we will see you somewhere out on the scene.